Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio. Joining me tonight, of course, is Luann Fleming and Robin Austin, and they run faceus.org out of Colorado, and they also have the Hidden Truth radio show, and they cover much of what we do here on TS Radio, and they have worked closely with us on this issue of Anastasia Adams. Right now, I'm waiting for Yolanda to call in. She was going to try and call in and give us an update these first 15 minutes of the show before Ann Blakey comes on. And what the update that I got today was that the law firm stated its intentions in an email that even with the campaign that had been launched against them, you know, they're the victims here, you know how that is. They're the victims. Even with the campaign that had been launched against them, they intended to proceed with the murder of Anastasia. And they have murdered this woman, or in the process of it. They have every intention of ending her life. I'm sure Medicare has run out. Medicaid has run out. Any private insurance. At some point, they canceled Kaiser Insurance. We're not sure how they were able to do that, but they did. And I see they're listening in, too. Welcome. You should flag up if you want to talk. Get on the show. We'll be glad to talk to you. And but just jump right on here. We're nice people. I don't think you are, but we are. Anyway, Yolanda had visited with her, and she seemed to be as good as she could be under the circumstances. We have an unexpected guest with us this evening who called in just before the show, and we'll have her talk a few minutes. And her name is Carly Walden. And Carly, you're with Hospice, correct?
Yes, I'm with Hospice Patients Alliance. That's
okay.
Correct. Ron Panzer is the president of that organization.
Okay.
And our purpose is, we have been educating and exposing, he's a whistleblower on hospice and palliative care. That's the same thing.
Right.
So a lot of people get that confused, but that is the same thing. They're, you know, that they are killing people. The euthanasia society has taken over hospice and palliative care.
Yes. You just Carly, you just answered something, and I've had a lot of people ask me, and it has been my thinking that this basically was backdoor eugenics and euthanasia.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly what's going on. It's euthanasia, exactly what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
The welcome to the rosy death of hospice. I mean, it's terrible. It's terrible what they're doing. And this is going on, you know, this is a government-funded program, Medicare.
Yes.
Pays 100% of hospice. They pay 100%. Most of the time, whenever an individual begins to negatively affect the hospital's budget in any capacity, then a caseworker and the doctor will go in, and 99% of the time, hospice or palliative care, which is the same thing, they just two different words, same thing, they do the
mm-hmm.
same thing, will come in, will be suggested, and then that person's going to either be taken to an inpatient unit, you know, an inpatient facility, or hospice can come into your home, honey. They can come in anywhere. They can go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the reality of what we're dealing with today in our healthcare system.
Carly,
yes,
I've been
so
screaming about this since they passed Obamacare. One of the things I had found in it, I printed off this massive monstrosity of a bill And it took me close to 6 weeks to actually go through it line by line, backtrack it through code and title. But what I found was an $11.5 billion infusion of cash into hospice to change it from a Good Samaritan outfit based on volunteers to their main objective being hastening end of life. And about 6 years ago, I attended a orientation class for hospice. And this is exactly what they were telling the people in there, that you were to encourage people to let go, that they'd had a long life, it was somebody else's turn. Don't put your family through this. Don't put yourself through this. You don't need all of this. And basically, it was a mathematical score. Do you qualify on this mathematical score? If we invest in your recovery or remission or your health, will you be able to earn enough back to pay society back for their investment? And, of course, the answer always comes up, no. At this point, the hospice nurse is given total authority over the patient and any directives they have, over the family and the doctor, and calls the shots, correct?
That's correct. What happens is this. We call this the bait and switch technique that they use, that hospice uses, and palliative care. And what they do is they're going to send someone to you that's going to be like the salesperson, okay? That wants you, makes you feel like, they make you feel like they're trying to sell you like a checking account or a credit card. It's, you know.
Right.
It's pictured as something that you're, that it's not at all, okay? But anyhow, once the family, who is the medical, whoever the medical power of attorney is, this is very important for people to understand. Whoever the medical durable power of attorney is, whenever they sign that paperwork letting their loved one go into a hospice in any form or fashion, whether it's to an inpatient facility or at home or in the nursing home, assisted living facilities, care in boardrooms, it covers everything. They go everywhere.
Okay.
That's the physician. What happens is the director over the hospice or the palliative care gets a physician order form, okay, and on that physician order form is morphine, Ativan, Seroquel, and Haldol, and whatever he checks off, whatever he checks off, and Roxanol is what is used, which is the most concentrated form of morphine in hospices and palliative care, okay, very dangerous lethal drug cocktail things we're talking about here.
Okay.
So what I wanted to get my point across, I was connecting it to you with the hospice nurse, is when that physician has checked off, has gotten that physician order form done, checked off the morphine or the Ativan or the Haldol, it basically gives that nurse all power to give however much morphine that they deem is necessary. I know this to be true. It's 100% true. It's going on every day.
And it's the death shot is basically what it is. It's the death shot. They can hit him with
a cocktail.
Yeah.
It's a lethal drug cocktail, and they know that's why you may hear sometimes if you're in a hospice that some of the nurses will tell you, we can predict the time of death. That has been said a lot of times. Well, the reason they can predict the time of death is because they know when they gave the lethal drug cocktail.
Oh, my God.
Individual.
How do you do this? How do you do this?
We can't understand either. My grandmother was rescued from hospice, thank God.
Yeah.
But we found out exactly what was in her system, and it was very ugly, Marty.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, she had been overdosed, but she survived. And
bless her heart.
She was, I don't want to overspeak or anything, but
This is
real.
Okay, Luann, Robin, what are you thinking here?
Wow. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, I feel like the I try to look at the world and I try to have love and compassion for everyone, and that would include the people that are doing these crimes. And the only way that I can find that I can actually do that is to realize that the reality is that these people are experiencing a kind of blindness to their own soul, to the things that matter in the life of a spiritual being in a physical body. We are all spiritual beings in physical bodies, in my view.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what this means is that these people who are committing these crimes, and why do I say committing crimes? Because if I did what they do, it would be criminal. That's how I mm-hmm. judge. I'm judging by that guideline. If I were to do this, would it be right for me to be prosecuted for a crime? The answer is absolutely yes. If I were killing mm-hmm. someone with drugs, well, I'm not a hospital administrator, so that's illegal. If I were depriving someone of food and water and holding them hostage, that would be illegal unless there's some mechanism that sort of says, oh, well, that's not a crime if so-and-so does it. It's only a crime if you do it. I'm sorry. I don't buy that. These are crimes, mm-hmm. and these people that are committing these crimes put their own souls in jeopardy, and I pray that they gain enough self-insight to understand what they do to themselves and to regret it, to repudiate it, and to turn from it and to begin to speak out against it, because mm-hmm. this killing of our citizens by individuals who pretend like they're doing some service is
yes.
murder, and those who are committing the murders are destroying their own souls along with the individuals that they're killing. God bless us everyone. I believe that the soul that goes through this is freed upon their death of the tortures of these people. But I do not believe that those people who inflicted those tortures will be as fortunate. I think that the reality is that they face a fate that is worse than death. And I pray that they come to their senses and change before they do this one more time. And I pray that that happens with Anastasia Adams.
Right.
Well, the thing that gets me with this, and you've elucidated it quite clearly, this is murder. I don't care who does it.
That's right.
I feel the same way about the death penalty. Regardless of what someone's done, the taking of another life, you have just
right.
committed the same crime you are killing that person for. That makes you no better. I don't care how, you know, humane you try to make the killing. You're still
mm-hmm.
murdering another human being. That we are doing this under the auspices of medical care, as though this is some mm-hmm. kindness being done. This is a
mm-hmm.
very extraordinary, excruciating way to pass away. The palliative care that you're talking about, this overdosing of morphine, is probably the most merciful thing that happens, because it mm-hmm. the closing down of the internal organs is an extraordinary, painful, excruciating process. And all they have done is rendered these people the same as when we give someone a lethal injection. The first thing they're given is a shot to paralyze them so they cannot respond. They can't cry out. They can't move. They can't flinch. They can't do anything. As then the second load is brought in, which shuts down the internal organs so that they can't scream out. So the people sick enough to sit and watch this crap aren't insulted by what they see. We are doing
right.
the same thing to people in hospitals, because
That's
they
right.
are disabled, because they are old, because they got dementia, they got senile, because insurance won't pay any more money. We can't profit
mm-hmm.
off them. They're out of here. And the people
That's
that
right.
are doing this, I agree with you, Robin. There is a special fire burning for these assholes somewhere. And I
That's
intend
right.
to put wood on that fire. And that is exactly how I see this. We are killing people because we have decided that economically, financially, it isn't to our benefit to keep them alive. Now, what kind of people are we?
You spoke that very well, I just have to say, because that is 100% the truth that's going on. And people, and a lot of people don't realize it, Marty, at all. They just blindly trust. And that's unfortunately a lot of the calls that we get at Hospice Patients Alliance is when it's too late. But we want to start opening eyes and let people know, hey, this is what's really going on when you put your loved one here.
Mhm. Wow.
So. Yeah. I'm glad that we're having this conversation. A lot of people are uncomfortable to talk about this, but these are conversations that must be had.
Well, and they should. And see, people have come to so distrust the medical industry on so many levels. Mm-hmm. People are afraid to go to the doctor. People over 50 are terrified to go to the hospital for fear they won't come home. They'll never home again. When the first thing, and I've told everybody, when you go in the hospital, the first thing that happens before they admit you is an asset search is done on you to see what you have. If you have participated in any of those, let us help you plan your estate and avoid conservatorship and guardianship. BS, they're assembling a database, and you come in, you come up on that system that you have assets, you ain't going home, baby. And if you ever do get out of there, it'll be to some prison facility they call a nursing home while you are being robbed blind. And as soon as your money is gone, so are you. And but I've heard more people say, I would rather die in my tracks than go back to another doctor. We can't trust them to give us medications that don't kill us and harm us. We can't trust them to, they're constantly after you about these vaccines. We don't vaccinate. We're never sick, but everybody around us that gets vaccines has got this disease to that disease and another disease. And they're on some of them, people that my age, on 6, 12, 15 medications a day and can't figure out why they don't feel good. And but what I'm saying is it has become just an absolute terrifying experience to go to the doctor because you don't know. If you're going home, you're going to the hospital, or you're going to the morgue. You don't know. One of our listeners just referred to it as a billfold biopsy. it's a billfold biopsy.
Haven't heard of that one before, but they're right on.
Yep, there you go. There you go. We've got a caller on here from area code, I believe it's... let's see. Oh, God. My board's scrambling on me. This is not good. 404. That's 938.
I think that's me.
That's you. Me, okay. Okay. Then we've got 831.
Hi, Marty.
Hi.
It's Marissa Conover calling.
Marissa Conover. Yes, Marissa, did you have a question or comment?
I just had a quick comment. I wanted to interject a statement you made about, you know, murder is murder, no matter who does it. You're against euthanasia. You're against death penalty. But I wanted to interject a real important point here. The most vile criminals, Charlie Manson had more due process than Anastasia Adams is getting.
You damn right.
Our elderly and our disabled are not criminals. But yet the criminals like Charlie Manson or the worst serial killer have more due process than our elderly or disabled in a healthcare facility. And what the hell is wrong with that? That is the most despicable outrage. It makes me so angry. No due process whatsoever. You know, my mother was pharmaceutically raped with Haldol by predatory healthcare workers. She died a horrible, painful death in an irreversible vegetative state with no due process. But yet if I was ever successful in getting a district attorney's office to charge them with homicide, they would have more due process rights than they afforded my mother.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. This is why you're made a ward of the state. It strips you. It's, and I've harped on this endlessly, and I'm going to keep harping on it till people catch on. When right. you go into that administrative court, this is the ultimate in identity theft. You are declared dead in the law. You have suffered a civil death. That's what a ward is. Someone
That's
who has
terrible.
Suffered a civil death.
It
you
is.
No longer exist in the law. Your identity been given to that attorney and guardian who now present themselves as you, who speak as you, and who access all of your assets and make all your decisions. It is the mm-hmm. ultimate identity, and there has been no injury. This is, you're not in a criminal court, you're not in a civil court. No one has suffered an injury.
It's
so
a human rights violation of the worst
yes.
kind. And what makes my mother's assault and death so heinous and egregious, she was not in a guardianship.
Yeah.
She had all
yeah.
of her rights as a citizen of the United States when she was pharmaceutically raped.
Yes.
So,
that's true, Marissa.
Yep.
You're right,
And you
Marissa.
Don't have any. You don't get any. You don't get any rights. This thing about, oh, due process will be filed. Followed. No, you don't get any due process. They don't have to follow
no,
rules
that's,
of evidence.
That's the biggest facade. That's what people have the illusion, the big illusion rights, you know. It's a betrayal
yeah.
is what it is.
They're so protected, which is really, really hard
yeah.
for a lot of people to get through and to get justice for when their loved one was murdered right in front of their
right.
eyes. And they realize, oh, God. You know, I didn't. This is not what I signed up for. This is no one
exactly.
told me that this was what was going to happen. And you're sitting there all of a sudden, and you're forced to face death directly.
Yes.
You know, in your face, and you're thinking, oh my God, you know, what do you do? And
mm-hmm.
that's why I talk a lot about it's very important about who you designate to be your medical power of attorney.
But see, now, Carly,
but
you go into these probate courts and the statutes mm-hmm. in every state, and this was created by the bar associations, the National Guardianship Associations, and the College of Probate mm-hmm. Judges. That's who put these together. That probate administrator, he's not a real judge, can discard all of your pre-standing legal instruments and
yeah.
give those rights and powers over to this total stranger who's never laid eyes on you in most cases, and those papers mean nothing. Getting durable
right.
power of attorney means nothing because they discard them and say, well, they're incapacitated now, so they're clairvoyant. I'm telling you, they're psychic. They can see into the future
mm-hmm.
and the past and everything. Even if the papers have been in place 20 years, well, if you're incapacitated now, you must have been 20 years ago. So these
mm-hmm.
aren't any good. And they just discard
yeah.
them. Florida statutes, of course, are the prime example where it states openly that this probate administrator can discard these statements, these instruments at will if they see them
mm-hmm.
as an obstacle. Does not say an obstacle to what, but we know what it is, to the assets. And
okay.
they need
right.
total control to do this. And so
right.
this is a system that needs to be taken apart on so many levels that it is absolutely terrifying. But the ultimate goal of this is to get rid of as many of us as possible and make money while you're doing it. And
mm-hmm.
I truly believe that. We need more people like you, Carly, coming forward from other organizations and groups, other angles on this, adding to this. Of what
oh,
we've
yeah.
been telling
I mean, you know,
people.
I had to live through this. I quit going. I was going to be a doctor. And I completely got out of this. It's the culture of death is
yes.
what it is. And until
yes.
we get to the point of restoring, you know, the culture of life, then we're not ever going to fix this problem.
Exactly.
We're facing a crisis. Our health care is in crisis.
Yes.
And, you know, it was only truly, you know, my grandmother, you know, God just used me as a vehicle to be able to help save her life. I literally got her out of the hospice, an inpatient hospice, and it just within a few hours' time before her death. Okay, wow. They had already given the lethal drug cocktail. And anyway, make a long story short, she survived that overdose, which was deemed an overdose by medical doctors, several. And she's been alive for almost 3 years longer.
Oh,
she had none of the misdiagnoses, none of the that they threw on her, nothing. They completely just decided they were going to get rid of her.
Okay.
And so our family learned the hard way. So that's why I'm a board member with Hospice.
Bless your heart.
Because I lived through it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Our guest this evening was supposed to be Ann Blake Tracy. And Luann, if you can try and get a hold of her, maybe she's trying to get in. I'm hearing from people that we're getting a lot of interference with the show again. Gee, what a freaking surprise. But she may be trying to get in, and I just can't pick her up. And if you could see, if you could contact her and see if she is trying to get online,
maybe I
can work something out here.
Hey, Marty, Marty, it's Marissa. I'm going to free up the line. I just wanted to interject about the no due process, but definitely.
All right.
Okay. Have a good evening. I'll be listening in.
Thanks, Marissa.
Okay. Have a great rest of the show. I'll be listening.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Carly, when you came across all of this, when you realized what was going on, and I think one of you put it very succinctly. You know, this is not a culture of life, but a culture of death.
It is.
It's a culture of death. This is terrifying. It's terrifying.
It is terrifying. It is terrifying. It goes against, you know, completely against any moral compass, any moral code. It's off. It's terrible. And it is all about the money. And you're right about that, Marty. It really is.
Yeah.
It's about the money. So we've interviewed, you know, hospital people that were in positions of power in the hospital that saw how this went down, how patients were basically disposed of, and it was all about the budget. If they started to negatively affect the hospital's budget, you know, may it be, you know, whatever. Medicine they're taking, it's really expensive.
Right.
The insurance company is tired of paying for it, but Medicare will step right in and pay 100% of hospice. So, you know, get it right off their back, you know, and that's how they do. That's one of the ways that they dispose of them in the hospital setting. Yeah, and then throwing misdiagnoses on them, you know, is terrible. That's done all the time. That's why we always say, please try to, you know, get second or third opinions if you can. And, you know, be connected with a pro-life, you know, a pro-life doctor. We have a pro-life database.
Okay.
Hospice Patients Alliance does. And
okay.
So does, we have a
Carly,
we have
Carly,
a
one of the things they're doing now. Is medical kidnap for asking for a second opinion, most particularly with children. What we're finding is 90% of the children they're doing this to are Hispanic or Black children. And if they ask for a second opinion, the hospital immediately guardianizes them. The first case I think we all saw of this was of Justina Peltier. She was a white girl, but she had mitochondrial disease. This was out at Boston Children's Hospital. And come to find out, they've done this to 26 other children because disagreed with the diagnosis that Tufts Medical Institute had made on this girl. She was 15 at the time. She was having a bad episode. She had mitochondrial disease, a form of mitochondrial disease, because she had this bad episode. They called Tufts. Tufts said Boston's children is closer. Take her there, get her stabilized, and then we'll transfer her here. They got her there. It was a year before they got her back. By the time they get her back, Boston's children said, oh, she doesn't have mitochondrial. It's psychosomatic. It's all in her head. Now this kid's in a wheelchair for the rest of her life. And
oh, my God. Terrible. Oh, my God.
Yeah, but asking for a second opinion now is grounds enough for the hospital, who I'm finding many hospitals now employ their own private guardians. They're usually attorneys acting in both capacities, but they employ mm-hmm. them and they get a guardianship overnight. Hopefully that is our Anne. Anne?
Hi, I've just been listening.
Oh, okay. All right. And yay. A lady named Carly Walden has joined us, and she's with Hospice Alliance and called in, and we're going to be hooking up with her and her group. And what we've been talking about is what happens in the hospital and the drugging that's involved in it. This is your area of expertise.
I've been listening, and that's exactly what they did to my father.
Yes.
I called as soon as I figured out what they had done was right after my dad died. I went, oh my God. And I found your website online that spelled out exactly everything they had just done to my father. And I immediately contacted a doctor. He's a professor at a pharmacological school.
Mm-hmm.
And he required my book on antidepressants as it was required reading for his class.
Uh-huh.
And I called him and, I sent him an email quick and I said, can you tell me if these three drugs given together will put someone in a drug-induced coma?
Uh-huh.
He wrote back and said, tell me it's no one you know.
Oh, God.
And he said, tell me what they do. And he said, it would take only two of those to put somebody in a state like a warm mannequin ready for surgery.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I knew immediately what they had done to my dad. I mean, they put him in a drug-induced coma, then they refused food and water until he died.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what happened.
And I was saying, you've got to hydrate him. You've got to hydrate him. You wouldn't do this to a dog. You've got to hydrate him. And this woman, this supposed hospice nurse, looked at me and said, well, we wouldn't want to prolong his suffering. I thought, what suffering? He didn't have any till you guys got here. But
yep.
That's right.
Looked at her and said, I prolong my suffering every day of the week by eating and drinking.
Right.
I
have another message here from a listener who said, also beware of arbitration clauses hidden in the medical care provider's paperwork. And don't sign away your rights to sue. And he's got it in little letters, but he said to sue the bastards. And be aware of that, again, as I've told other people, Medicare will only pay, we talked about this at length the other night, for X number of days for whatever diagnosis you're given. And the hospital tries to get you out of there before those days are up, because those days that you weren't there, they get paid for. That's pure profit. This is why they discharge people against their own medical advice, if they were giving any. Is to get you out of there. Then for 24 hours, they won't readmit you no matter how bad you get. They'll put you in for observation, but you pay the bill for that. Once the 24 hours is up, now they readmit you as a patient and Medicare kicks in again. Now, Yolanda, and I wish she was on here with us. I know she was being delayed getting things done, but has the whole printout of how much. I've told people this, they enter all of the symptoms you give, and this program kicks up every possible diagnosis that can be applied to it, what therapies, medications, whatever surgeries will be paid for and what won't be. Now, this is generally used at hospitals that employ what are known as hospitalists, and these are doctors who don't work anywhere but at that hospital. And they are contracted to the hospital, the bottom line being me being here will guarantee a 20% increase in your profit. And so they move from diagnosis to diagnosis to diagnosis to keep this thing running. Okay, mm-hmm. And then when they can get no more money, when Medicare has said they will pay no more, Medicaid will pay no more. And another thing about Medicaid, you go on Medicaid now, this is under Obamacare, for 5 minutes at any time in your life, when you die, the state can come in now and take, if the guardians and attorneys haven't done it already, absolutely everything you own to pay them back. Mm. So getting people on Medicaid was very important because it is a backdoor way for the state and federal government to seize your property. There's nothing that comes from the federal government or even your state government these days that there are not massive hidden strings attached to. Disagreeing with your doctor. And what happens like when you... let's say with in the instance of your father, you know they're giving him this deadly medication that's going to harm him, and you tell them, I don't want him given that. Why are you giving that to him? What's the response? What do they do?
Well, I told him that, and we just took him off.
Uh-huh.
But
okay,
they talked my sister into continuing to give him the morphine.
Oh, my God.
That's right there.
And we've got this opioid epidemic going on. And that's another thing about these drugs. This started some years ago. Oxycodone and Vicodin are one molecule different from cocaine. Mm. They were manufactured to compete with street drugs. The pharmaceutical companies had gone to the FDA some years back and complained that there was a $5 billion a year black market industry in drugs, and they were being cut out of the action. So drugs like Vicodin and oxycodone that are highly addictive and really don't do anything other than addict you were produced in such massive quantities that they could supply the lawful prescription market globally and have enough to compete with street drugs. See how that works? And this was just fine. They're killing now on average over 200,000 people a year with these drugs. Mm. They're still on the market. Tell me how that happens. Tell me how that happens. And
money.
Go ahead.
Lots of money.
Yeah.
That's how it happens. They buy up everybody.
Yeah, Levaquin and Cipro. Levaquin and Cipro are chemotherapy drugs. They were developed to fight the infection caused by chemotherapy, which is still in clinical trials after 40 years. It's never been approved for use. It kills 60% of the people who start chemotherapy. It kills them within the first 30 days. Now tell me you haven't got a genocide program going. They have admitted recently that 95% of the time, chemotherapy is of no benefit whatsoever, and yet it's still being administered every chance they get. Cipro and Levaquin were to combat the infection caused by the massive die-off in the body of cells that chemotherapy caused. It attacks everything, good, healthy, indifferent, whatever. It kills it, causing this massive infection. They are considered failed chemotherapy drugs because when they added them to chemotherapy, people were dying faster than they were able to make the profit they projected. It was killing them faster. It was killing them too fast. They couldn't make enough money, so they considered them a failed drug. They put them out as a general antibiotic. They kill the mitochondria in your cells just like chemo does. Your body can no longer make vitamin D, just like chemo does to you. It poisons you to the point that your hair will start falling out of your head, just like chemotherapy does. Anytime stuff starts jumping off your body, you can take it to the bank. Something's going into it that's scaring your hair to death. So, but this is what I'm saying. It says right in their circular, not to be administered for urinary tract infections or sinus infections, can cause them to become acute and more severe. They just got chastised for doing exactly that routinely. And not to be given to people over the age of 60. They do it anyway. Don't prescribe it in conjunction with any corticosteroids, especially over the age of 60. This is like prednisone, you know, Advair, any of that stuff. They do it routinely. They not to be used with NSAIDs of any kind. I have yet to have a doctor tell me, don't use this with prednisone. In fact, I 2 years ago, this is how I know about this. I was given both of these drugs, not knowing what they were, thinking they were simply an antibiotic for a severe sinus infection. And I'm saving hair out of hairbrushes now, trying to cover the bald spots up on my head. And I would consider any contributions from any of you ladies. I'm patching here. Think of me, please, when you clean that hairbrush out. I need that hair.
You can have it, Marty.
But this is what they do. When I confronted my doctor about this, she said, oh, well, Marty, you know, at your age, almost slapped her. And I said, it hasn't got anything to do with my age. What is my hair is falling out? What's wrong with what my hair is falling out? I don't know if any of you are familiar with Dr. Andy Maniotis. He was formerly the head of cellular biology and pathology at the University of Illinois. Some years back, he also taught at Harvard, Iowa State, a few other places. This guy was top of his field. They had downtime in his lab, so they started replicating the chemotherapy trials that had supposedly been given to the FDA to prove what a wondrous thing this was. And it turns out they're all faked and flawed. He takes all of this research to the hospital or the university administrators and said, we've got to stop recommending this. We're not helping people. We're killing them. That was his whole lab is gone. So is his staff, all his research. He's out of a job. We are using this on children. On children. We are poisoning their bodies to the point that they're bald-headed, that they're in seizure. They are never going to have the life they were supposed to have, and they are eaten up with these cancers that are coming from God knows where. I don't know about any of you, but I don't remember growing up knowing 16 kids that either had or were dying of cancer. But we see the same thing here. We see this. It's, well, you know, we've done as much as we can. It's best to let them go. It's just best to let them go. We've tried all of our drugs on them, and we got all of our study work done. We really don't have any need for them anymore. See ya. And this is what they're doing to our elderly, to the disabled. We have devalued them. We have allowed these people to devalue them, to render them expendable and disposable. But before we let you go, we're going to do all kinds of things to you that are unspeakable. And then say, well, look at the condition they're in. Why would we want to keep them around? Luann, Robin, what do you got to say? I'm talking too much. Talk.
Well, my issue that I have with all this is that the drugging of the elderly, you know, and the disabled, and then you have, which causes a lot of problems as it is. I have so many complaints that come to our group, and it's facilitated by the judges, you know.
Yes.
They come in and they see your family for, you know, an hour, 2 hours, maybe a whole day court case, and then they go ahead and they give your family members to a complete stranger. And because they don't want the family to take care of their own family, well, isn't this how it used to be in the olden days where, you know, your family would take care of you, you take care of your family, but that's not allowed no more. You know, you're not allowed to take care of your loved ones. And all the trusts and the wills out there that people claim to work, I haven't seen one work yet.
Nope.
You know, where they're saying, go ahead and put all this stuff into a trust and a will and go ahead and get your power of attorneys ready. And make sure that you have all your papers in order and make sure that this will protect you against going to probate. It does not.
What it does is a profile that they can then use so that they have all the information about all of your financials. And that allows them to target who they wish to gain by the exploitation of those individuals, by the guardianization of those individuals, by the targeting of those individuals for court action that will incapacitate them. That is the apparently the more the greater truth about what's going on. These people are being targeted through their financial
activities. Exactly, and that's what this. Come to our probate meeting. You know, avoid guardianship and conservatorship. But of course, you have to give us a list of what all you own, where it's at, who has access to it. Blah 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 blah. They just database you. They just database you.
And
now
like
you're in
our
the system.
Organization. Mm-hmm. Our organization always says do not give any information at all whatsoever.
Yep, no.
Period.
Nope.
Never.
Okay. Everybody hold on. Yolanda has joined us. Yolanda, you're running late, I see. That's okay. We're glad to have you. How is Anastasia today?
She's doing so-so. You know, barely opened her eyes. She tried to, but her left one is extremely red, and I'm guessing by looking at her eyes are extremely dry, but they have her so drugged it's not funny.
Oh my God.
It's like she's trying to wake herself up, and she's, you know, she'll cry out, and it's very difficult to just basically with what they're doing to her.
Yeah,
You got a
communication today from the attorney's office that they intend to continue on with this, right?
Yes, that's correct. The pro bono attorney that I was using, she had been trying to use a collaborative, diplomatic posture or take that avenue, and he basically just said he didn't matter what she said to him and how much publicity this got, they were still going to go ahead with ending her life.
Jesus
Christ. Terrible.
My God.
Terrible.
And ironically, the miniature documentary, Edith and Eddie, they were doing a screening of that in D.C. tonight, and I come walking up to this documentary, and there the Guardian Labowitz and his wife are here.
Oh. Did you walk up and tell her what a jerk her husband is, or no?
No, I just went about my business. They didn't have tickets, so they had to wait to see if somebody wasn't going to show up so that they could go in and actually sit down. But he didn't look real comfortable.
I'd have walked up and asked him. Yeah, I would have walked up to her and said, "Do you know you're laying down with the mass murderer?" I mean, did that ever occur to you? I mean, I just said something.
Marty, you forget. His wife owns an elder estate sales business.
Oh my goodness, what the hell was I thinking?
Yes, you forget. Exactly.
She's
so it's
family
not
business.
She doesn't know.
Yeah, family business.
So,
family affair.
Anastasia didn't look well at all. So,
Luann, you're gonna start cussing here. Go ahead.
Robin, better hold my hand because this just infuriates me. And then I get off and I'm just angry the whole night. They're like, what can we do? I mean, this is Anastasia, and I see the videos of her, you know, and I cannot believe that these people are just going to say, okay, her life is over. It's not theirs.
Yeah,
it's
unbelievable.
It's ours to decide.
That's happening.
No, it's sick.
One of the things, Yolanda, from the interview last night, the thing that struck people the most that I got – I mean, it was just nonstop, was about the fact that when you moved to the back of the building with the vigil on the side her room was on, that you saw the aides come in and shut the blinds so she couldn't see you. I think that hit people so hard that they were this cruel that they would let her have this.
So she's not allowed at all anywhere near her sister, correct?
I am allowed to visit her 3 times a week for 1 hour between Monday through Friday, the hours of 9 and 5. Just recently, not too long ago, they finally allowed me to start giving her a hug and a kiss at the beginning of the visit and at the end. And Wednesday of last week, I guess it was, or maybe it was Friday, that they allowed me to start holding her hand.
Well, wasn't that right. quiet of them? That
yeah.
was just so quiet
really.
Of them.
I'm so sorry what you're going through, Yolanda. My name is Carly Walden.
Hi, Carly.
Hi. I do work with Hospice Patients Alliance. We are, again, in palliative care and hospice care. It's the same thing. Do you
yes.
know that? Were you aware of that, Yolanda?
Did we lose
yes,
you?
Yes, I heard that.
No, go,
yeah.
go ahead.
Okay, so palliative care and hospice care, same thing. Okay, so you know that they're killing your sister, and
yes,
you're trying to save her life. That's my understanding.
Well, I did file an emergency motion for stay with the Supreme Court today. So we'll
okay,
with the
so
Virginia Supreme Court. So we'll see. Yes, I did. So we'll see. Although, you know, there was an individual that tried talking me out of it, and I'm like, yeah, this just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
But no, it was filed today. Oh, my God.
Okay, and that was an emergency.
I got confirmation. Yeah, exactly. I got confirmation that it has been filed. So we'll see what the Virginia Supreme Court does with it.
Okay.
Anne, I wanted to ask you to jump in here on something. With the drugs they're giving her, even if Yolanda would be successful in getting nutrition and hydration reestablished, with the drugs that they're most likely administering her, what kind of recovery would be anticipated, if any?
You can't just quit antidepressants.
Okay.
You have to wean off of them very slowly.
Okay.
It has to be an extremely slow, gradual process, or you go psychotic.
Okay. That's what I was told, because fentanyl is, highly addictive, and you cannot just take somebody off of that. That it would have to be, that's going to take weeks upon weeks to actually get, because they have her on, or at least before they upped the dosage, they had her on 50 micrograms of fentanyl plus, I guess it was 20 milligrams of morphine.
Gee, many Christmas.
That's
yeah.
terrible.
So they've upped the dosage since then, but yes.
That's terrible.
And,
so they're killing her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Being killed.
Yeah, they are.
Okay. Have you thought and tried to get an attorney way outside of the area of all these politics and kickbacks and everything else that everyone's doing and getting on behalf of your sister?
Well, so the thing about it is that the courts aren't going to let another attorney step in on behalf of my sister. They can step in and help me, but because she has a guardian, only the guardians are able to get a somebody to represent my sister.
Right.
Until the Supreme Court comes back. But even these people have being that far away from the area when they need to file something, then they generally look to have somebody local to do it for them, and that's where they run into problems.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Because nobody in Northern Virginia
will touch it. I spoke with our president, and he said that you would need to get an attorney to file an injunction to get all of this to stop.
Okay.
And if you're able to see her 3 times a week, is she able to speak for herself?
Not now.
They're already putting her into, they're trying to put her into an eternal sedation. That's what we call it.
Yeah.
It's all the same thing. But, okay, so there are, so she can now not speak for herself. How many days has it been since she's been this way?
It's been since Wednesday is when we got the notification they were going to remove the nutrition and the hydration. Now she's been for the last 2 to 3 weeks. There's been times I've walked in that she just wouldn't open her eyes at all. You know, she knew I was there and everything, and she would moment she wouldn't open her eyes.
Right, she's over medicated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've been doing that from the very start. When they first put her in the nursing home, even before they broke her hip, they all of a sudden put her on morphine. And when I asked, well, why are you putting her on this? Well, because she has pain from her contractures. Yeah, Tylenol takes care of that.
Yeah, that's right. So you're a pro-life sister. You're trying to do the right thing, fighting against the culture of death is what's going on here.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that hits me here, and I've seen this at having dealt with so many of these cases, not nearly most of them quite this severe, but in all of them, these guardians restrict family members from comforting, caring for, holding, touching, kissing, and other, speaking to this person who's being tortured like this. Mm-hmm. What kind of animal does this? And these are animals. These are not human beings. They look like us. They walk like us. They talk like us. But I'm telling you, this is a whole different breed of animal. Who stands and watches this? It just reminds me of a horror movie, They Walk Among Us. These are subhumans. How do you deprive someone?
Mm.
How do you deprive someone?
75% of them are on drugs.
Really?
Yes, I've got that post ready to go out now. But
oh, I want that post.
I've heard that since 2007. But finally, there is a doctor that actually has a website up talking about the high rate of use of antidepressants among doctors and nurses. It's their conscious. There's no empathy. There's no feeling. I mean, they're designed to cut out feeling.
Yes.
But they can't say just get rid of depression or just get rid of anxiety. It gets rid of all feeling. These are actually anesthetic drugs. They are not antidepressants. They're anesthesia. You look at a brain of somebody on one of these, and it shows them in a total anesthetic sleep state and dreaming while they talk to you.
Oh, my God.
I
want to let everybody know, Yolanda had just texted me. Something came up, and she had to leave. So she wanted to thank everybody for being on here this evening and talking. I hope this is good. God, please don't let this be bad news. Go back and talk more about this and this thing about them actually being in a sleep state and dreaming.
Yeah, there's just nobody home. So there's no feeling. There's no empathy. There's no compassion. They feel nothing. That's why often with these murder-suicide cases or murder cases, they'll say that there was no emotion from the suspect. They can't feel, so of course there's no emotion. They're dead.
Gee, Minnie Christmas. So they're, holy cow. That
and
is an absolutely terrifying thought.
If you look at the case of the 14-year-old girl there in Pennsylvania that was one of the only female school shooters, she shot her best friend at a Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
I had called the attorney and I said, you need to look for one of these drugs. But of course he was being bombarded with reporters. And I knew he would be, but at least the thought was in his head. And so a few days later on 2020, Connie Chung interviewed the girl. And she said, I don't understand how you go from wanting to become a nun and having Mother Teresa as your idol to shooting your best friend at school. And the girl thought for just a second, and she said, well, I couldn't feel God anymore. I said, bingo.
Yeah.
I called the attorney the next day and I said, your client was on one of these drugs. This is what she said on the air last night. And this is what I hear from patients on these drugs all the time. They can
feel
no spiritual feelings anymore. And so he rattled his papers around for a minute, and he said, Paxil, is Paxil one of those drugs?
Uh-huh.
You got it.
Jesus. Jeez.
Well, that's a different way of looking at it, is for sure, is that the doctors and the nurses are heavily medicated.
Yeah, and that's scary as heck.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I watched one yesterday at church that I know he's on the drugs. I almost walked up to him and said, and he's read my book because he tried to argue with me about it years ago. And I'm sure he was on the drugs then and just has never been able to get off because they're so hard to get off of unless you know how. If you've got my CD on how to get off, you can make it off. But if you don't know all of those certain specific things about it, you're not going to get off. So I almost walked up to him and said, you know, you're really in bad shape on these drugs. When you're ready to get off on them, to let me know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me ask this, Ann. let's take one of these elderly people that they have forcibly chemically restrained. This is no different than tying them up or chaining them to a wall. But except you just didn't have to use any rope.
Exactly.
Let's say you get mom or dad back and you're going through the process. You get them off the drug or drugs. What can you expect in the way of recovery? Is it possible for them to recover from these drugs? Is there long-going brain damage from these? I know they all cause a shrinkage of the frontal cortex of the brain, which is permanent.
Right.
It increase dementia. Or can cause it, and Alzheimer's. And so what happens? What are the chances that you can recover at least some of who that person was before these people got a hold of them and started this drugging?
Well,
we
help people do that all the time.
Get done.
Say what there?
Marty, I can actually speak because my grandmother was rescued from a hospice where she was overdosed and misdiagnosed and rescued. And now she came at, now it took a week for her to come out of the morphine coma in a hospital, but she is now totally recovered. She is totally recovered. She is she just had her 88th birthday. She was literally misdiagnosed, overdosed, and rescued from a hospice. And we've been, you know, I left going to medical school to help my parents take care of her. And she's still with us today, and she's great. I mean, she can tell you her name. Granny, I'm on a show, but it's about hospice, and you've been a hospice survivor for 3 years. Why don't you just tell them your name, and I just want you to hear how it can affect, because I've got living proof right here. Hold on.
Wow.
Yes, this is Jackie and McGibney, and I live in the Covington area, and I'm a Christian, and I've been praying for a lot of people that in a hospice. I'm a hospice survivor. Carly helps me all the time. That's my granddaughter, Carly. And I couldn't do it without her, and the Lord is right there in the middle of it. We can't do without. We can't do without the Savior.
Well, it's a pleasure and an honor to have you speak to us. It truly is, and it's giving hope to a lot of people out there just to hear you speak.
Yeah.
And you go.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
I'll be praying for them. Just
thank you.
I wanted to get that out there. Sorry about that.
Go ahead.
I mean, you guys. That's, you know, she was on it. They told us that she was like literally within hours of her death, and they had given her 40 milligrams. Yeah, they gave her 40 milligrams of Roxanol morphine, Ativan, and Seroquel within less than a 2-day period.
Jesus.
And yeah, all this was found there. And then the doctors came in and told us she doesn't have end-stage cardiomyopathy. She doesn't have renal failure. All that your grandmother has is a urinary tract infection.
Yeah.
Oh, my
yes.
God.
And she has survived 3 years. No one's ever been taken out of that hospice alive.
Too many Christmas.
Oh.
Hey,
Luann,
are you cussing yet,
Luann? Yeah.
Are you cussing?
You know, I'm
sure. I just want you guys to.
I do a lot of that. But you know what? You should ask Ann about how these judges are on these drugs also.
Exactly.
They've
been wining and dining them for a long time. You know how they wine and dine the doctors? They're doing the same thing with the judges.
Exactly.
Wow.
And too many times, Ann, people are, if they're even allowed into that probate hearing, and I'm still trying to get from, I have questioned now more than 60 law firms who are supposed to be experts and answer me this one question. How does the living person become subject to the probate court when it is only supposed to become active upon presentation of the death certificate? You have a live person there. This is why they're not allowed to appear in court. And if they are brought into court, they are drugged out of their mind. So they appear to be totally somewhere else and totally unaware, which they are because they're drugged up so bad. And these judges know it. They know it.
Yeah.
And then they say, oh, well, they are. They're incompetent. They're incapacitated. Yeah. Here, now you go ahead and be them. And by the way, here's their checkbook. And this is,
and then they get a kickback.
Yes, on the east side of the country, the they get 2 to 3% of the value of the estate every time a motion is made in that probate court. As you move to the west coast, it jumps to 5 to 6% of the value of the estate at that point in time that they make right off the top for entertaining that motion in front of the probate court. So they're making money as this happens. In one case here in Minnesota, a very wealthy man passed away. He had two heirs, had his estate all set up. It was supposed to transfer immediately upon death. The attorney, 16 of them, lined up down the wall to file into that case that had never had any business with this man or his family. And each one of them, each one of them, got to make their motion, got to tap the estate. And that's something people just don't seem to understand. The probate system, the victim, the person that they are imprisoning, whose identity they are stealing, whose assets they are going to seize, pays for everything. Absolutely everything that happens in that probate court is paid by the person who has caused no one any injury, has caused no one any problems, has done nothing. They are paying for the judge, the jury, and the executioner. And these attorneys will file and file and file into these cases on the most frivolous of ideas and motions to get a piece of the pie. It's called fee churning. And they will do it, they'll do this all day long to keep money rolling in. These shows, these shows are about this, about abolishing this system. And again, I go back to, and we're talking about here the really dark side of it, the drugging of these people, the killing of people we can't get any more money out of, the really ugly side of this. But the start of all of it is this probate system, which could be ended with the stroke of a pen by the Congress of the United States. And they will not do it. There is so much money coming in supposed campaign contributions, the money you and I would call bribery, that they will not act as to protect the people in their public duty. It is a failure of Congress to act to protect us from this predatory criminal racketeering that's going on across the country. Because they're taking money from the very people who put the system in place. They don't want the money train to stop. So they don't give a damn about us.
That's right.
We have got to work in the States. Carly, I want to work with you. I'm working with Luann and Robin. We're doing everything we can to try to pull people together to get them to work as a team. But this
yes.
has to happen in the States. And we have to coalesce in the States and change it at the state level. Federally, they're not going to do anything but facilitate the racketeering. And
right.
Yep. So we've got to organize in the States. Now, Robin and Luann have done massive work in Colorado. I do a lot here in Minnesota that I try to keep quiet about because I don't want to be interfered with. Everybody does
well,
their
I'm
own thing.
Well, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, so.
Oh, I got family there, sweetie. And so, yeah. I lived down there for about 15, 16 years. Down
oh,
on the
okay.
south end. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so my oldest son owns a huge construction company down there. But
okay.
yeah, so I'm familiar with the area. But we need to organize in our states. I think the things that Luann and Robin have done in Colorado, leading the charge
okay.
out there, and they are relentless, is a good example of how to begin in-state organizing. And Luann,
okay.
Robin, we want to do a show on that, too. What you've done, how you've gone about going after these people, trying to effect this change. I am not at all interested
have they,
in...
Have they been able to successfully get anyone prosecuted criminally for murdering, our elderly?
No,
nobody has.
Okay. And the case you want to go back to is the standard on this is, of course, Terry Schiavo.
Right.
This is what they did. This was the conditioning. This was the brainwashing of the public. This was taking the public's temperature. If we arbitrarily end someone's life, how much ruckus are you people going to raise?
Mm-hmm.
And what are you going to say about it? This is what that whole case was about. Well, of course, they did end her life. And
right.
it died down as quickly as it came up. That was the cue that it's okay to do this. We can get away with doing this. So we
mm-hmm.
have to work in our states again to make this a criminal act for anyone in the medical profession or legal profession or acting as a guardian to facilitate or initiate the end of life on another human being. We do not have the right to do that. I keep hearing all this stuff about us being a Christian. Oh, we're a Christian nation. Where are these damn churches?
Right.
And I've talked to them.
That's right.
Well, if we say anything, we'll lose our tax-exempt status. Oh, well, I see. That's most important. Where's that at in the Bible, that you worry about
That's
your tax-exempt
right, right.
status?
Mm-hmm.
Where are these churches? Where are all these big Christians that are pro-life and pro-this and pro-that, and they sit quiet and they don't say a damn word?
That's right.
Pro-Christian them, and they're the highest.
Because there's a lot of them
Christians.
Out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know where they are. But I want to do a show with Robin and Luann where they talk about the processes they've gone through. They've helped with legislation. These people have fought a tremendous battle trying to end this system in Colorado. And if nothing else, it is a starting point of what we
right.
can do in our states to
right.
start taking control of this. And
right.
probably
I love
Colorado
that.
Right now, we yeah. have, we're up to 40 families. We have 40 families documented with 10 cases we sent off to a forensic accountant. So
uh-huh.
we are working desperately, and we're working with quite a bit of people. It is not easy. I tell you that
no.
right now. And,
no,
and
it's not easy.
You have to stay persistent. You have to stay vocal, and you have to communicate with everybody and never stop talking.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And that's what our organization, we take calls every day. And it's most of the people that I deal with, and unfortunately, are people that have lost their loved ones due to being euthanized in a hospice setting. And we want to prevent that. We want to open people's eyes. We hold conferences,
And we want to educate people on how this, that we are living in the culture of death, but it can change by trying to restore the culture of life into the community, into the, you know, the country. But it's just, we know that it's tough. We know.
Yeah. Do you know what bothers me too in all of this is these kids coming up. I just graduated the youngest of two granddaughters that I raised. But they're coming home now. They live with me, so you know they're exposed to a lot of things kids normally wouldn't be. Their friends congregated here. We had a lot of conversations about things, but they were basically being indoctrinated in school about how you owe it to society to let go and not pressure society, because everybody's got it hard, you know. And if you're draining society and there's no hope that you can get any better, what would be the right thing to do? Well, I guess go put a bullet in your head. This was what I was getting from it. And I asked the kids, what do you think? And I said, do you think this is right, that simply because you get sick or you get old, I said, you're all sitting here eating my lasagna. I said, eating my garlic bread, and you're waiting for the cheesecake I made. I said, and just because I'm getting older, what, you're going to just put me down like you would your dog? And everybody just kind of laid their fork down and looked at me. I said, do you understand what I'm saying? This is basically what they are doing. Is this okay with you? If this was your grandmother, your mother, would you say, oh, well, you're sick now, you got to go?
You're right, Marty.
Exactly.
Right.
And I said, you are being trained to devalue people, to see them as expendable. And don't you understand, eventually, this will come down to you. At some point, they're going to decide you are expendable.
Right.
You are costing us too much. And
Marty,
it was like the light bulb.
This,
you see what?
I mean, you're really educating your you know, your grandchildren. I mean, to the reality that of what's taking place in our healthcare.
But they are
teaching our kids
this. They're teaching our kids this, to accept this as a normal way of life, something that should be expected. I hear this stuff all the time about how Americans don't value their seniors. They can't wait to throw them in a nursing home. No, they got snatched and stuffed in one. There's a difference. You won't let us see them. It isn't that nobody comes to see them. You won't let us see them. Why?
Marty? Marty, in every single case we have in Colorado, every single family member wanted to take care of their grandparents or their mother or their dad. The courts are the ones that do not allow that to happen.
Exactly.
That's terrible.
Exactly. Even though the statutes in every state say isolation is the last resort. You must always use the least restrictive. They don't pay any attention to that crap.
They do not care in this state whether you had a trust, a power of attorney, a will. It doesn't matter. They do not appoint a family member. I finally got in there and became a guardian and a conservator of, not a conservator of my mom, but a guardian, a co-guardian with my sister of my mom after 3.5 years. We did manage to do that. My mom is safe right now.
Good.
You know,
good. I'm glad to hear
that.
They
all know who I work for and what we do about this, and they're not going to mess with my mom down there. I tell you that right now. They're not.
You go, girl.
but there's a lot of families that's documented, over 40 families, and they are not allowing these families to take care of their own property, their own money, their own mom and dad. They're not allowed to do absolutely nothing, and they isolate the elderly and the disabled. Time every day.
And I think the cruelest part of this, if you could even find the cruelest part, is where they won't permit family members to comfort these people, to show them affection, to put their arms around them, to kiss them, to be next to them and talk to them. That, what in the hell's going on in your evil mind? That
right.
You would,
and Marty, I have one case out here. Marty, we had one case out here where the mother was dying, and they called the guardian if they could be with her, and they said, no, you have to do that another day. She won't be able to do that. And so he had to go home and see that night. They were not allowed to see their mother dying.
And that was after he traveled three hours to see her and had to go 3 hours to go home.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Well, and look at all the cases that we've come across. When I started this, it's been almost 8 years ago. And when I started this, the number of people whose grandma or mother or father, whomever, got snatched in one of these damn things, died,
mm-hmm.
and the family wasn't even notified sometimes for weeks or months that they had died, and then found out they had been cremated immediately. And so you couldn't do any autopsy, get any forensics done on it. And I want to go back again to HIPAA. This thing about it being patient privacy, it is not patient privacy. And I say again, when you have stolen someone's identity through probate and declared him a ward of the state, civilly dead, that person legally does not exist. There is no privacy of the patient to be claimed. It is the guardian now who presents themselves as that person. You're not asking for their medical file. You're asking for the medical file of this person they claim to be dead while they were still breathing.
Mm-hmm.
So HIPAA cannot possibly apply. HIPAA is to protect the medical industry and these guardians and attorneys from lawsuits for wrongdoing. That's what HIPAA is all about. It has nothing to do with patient privacy. Because your medical files are sold, bundled and sold to insurance companies, to employers, to colleges, universities, to this person, to that, any place they can sell them and make a buck, they're selling them. So there is no patient privacy. That's
mm-hmm.
BS. They only
mm-hmm.
play that card when they know they've done wrong, when they know they have caused harm, when they know they could get sued, and then all of a sudden, oh, it's patient privacy. Can't be. I didn't ask for your medical file. I asked for the person's medical file that you claimed was dead.
Mm-hmm.
What privacy are you talking mm-hmm. about?
Wow.
And, oh, good God. I'm not going to be able to sleep again tonight.
no.
And that, at my age, that is not good.
Well, you know what, Marty? I've had many nights like that myself, you know, because it is sickening what's going on. And people really need to wake up to it because, like you said, and you're teaching your grandchildren, this could be you one day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you really need – people just – America needs to wake up. Wake up and look what's happening and quit turning the blind eye.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, seriously. I mean, my God. You know,
it was enough
to cause me to, you know, I said to hell with going to medical school.
Yeah.
You know, after 7 years of preparation, I said to hell with it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be involved in this culture of death. You can forget it.
You know, what's really sad, Marty, about this whole thing is that now they're going after all these natural doctors and killing them one after another. We have over 77.
That's right.
And these are
the
natural doctors that want mm-hmm. the SSRI drugs. And they're killing them.
Lots of those doctors committed suicide on antidepressants.
Isn't that disgusting, Anne? And,
yeah.
And I
it's
think what a testament.
Because they kept my information from them from the very beginning. So they got convinced that these drugs were okay. There was a nurse in Wisconsin, I think it was, that had a huge nurses program, some kind of support kind of thing or continuing education for them. He killed his whole family and the family dog. And
oh, my God.
Last year or the year before.
Gee, many Christmas.
So,
you know,
Lord.
We have on the Whistleblower Show, we have some people coming on. This West Virginia area is a hotbed for this stuff, and this has to do with the Bakey VA Medical there. They have got a doctor there who has been killing vets since 1994 with the same methods we are talking about right here, and the drugging and everything else. And of course, we know that 22 veterans a day committing suicide is BS. They are being drugged to death with the combinations of these lethal drugs that stop their heart in their sleep, and then they say, "Oh, it's suicide." Yeah. We've got whistleblowers coming on from that hospital where they have documented the number of people, the veterans. This one doctor alone has been responsible for their death, and he coincidentally has set up now his own hospice. We're going to be talking about that on a whistleblower show here pretty soon, and I'll give you all a heads up on that. And we didn't get to talk to you near as much as I wanted to. And I want to do a show with you specifically on these drugs, what the effect is on the person and the brain and all of the exemplary work you have done. Luann told me, and I listened to your interview on her show that she did with you. And you too, Rob, and I didn't mean to leave you out there. excuse me, everyone.
But I
want to talk about these drugs and get people educated about what these drugs are and what they do to you. They will not help you. They will make you sicker if you survive them.
One reason why they're going after all the painkillers is they're switching them over to these drugs.
Yes. Yes.
I swear they want the whole world on antidepressants.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's another thing with the schools. And I talked to, sitting here with a gang of the kids the one night, the one young man was having some trouble at home, couldn't get along with his dad, and he was upset. And then he was sitting here in tears, and he said, the kids all call me Nanny. He said, Nanny, he said, you don't understand. I have issues. I have mental issues. And I said, you stop telling yourself that. And he said, what? Nice. I said, you stop telling yourself that. That is self-speak, self-talk. What you tell yourself is what will materialize. And I said, you quit telling yourself that. You have some issues you need to learn to cope with. And this is why they want you on drugs, so you don't learn coping skills. You don't learn how to think strategically, rationally, critically. You're supposed to be euphoric 24 hours a day. That is not a normal life. You need
That's
to go
right.
through these things so you learn. So you learn how to deal and cope.
They're teaching these kids that. Because most of their teachers are on these drugs.
Yes.
And that's why you got so many school teachers molesting their students.
Yes.
And, I mean, I was helping a teacher come off of these drugs. This was quite a few years ago. And she said, can you believe they made me school teacher of the year for the state while I was on Prozac? She said, I was trying to hire students to kill the principal.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, geez. Everybody, we've got a minute left here. This went way too fast, and we need to do this show again, and we need to talk some more. Carly, I want to thank you for calling in, and I want to stay connected with you. You can get me at PPJ1. That's like pop, jump, one.
All right.
At hush.com. And
at hush.com. Okay.
Yes. You can reach me there.
And
we're going to. Yes. And
thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you.
We're going to do another show with you. And I want you to talk extensively about these drugs and what they do, particularly to the elderly. Luann, Robin, Robin, keep your hands to yourself. I just got an email again from someone who said to keep your hands and don't be covering up Luann's mouth when she's going to be cussing. Anyway.
Hey, you're all lucky you can get a word in edgewise.
But we'll be back again next week and be working on this issue some more. But I think we need to do a show with Robin and Lulu specifically on how to organize in the state. Carly, you need to be a part of that. And there's a lot you can add to this. We will be back next Monday evening. And thank you, everybody, who joined us this evening. I truly appreciate the size of the audience. It looks like we hit 80,000 and some tonight. So good night, everybody, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.